What I've tried to do with the book is to show how powerful Radio 1 was in those days. I mean, if you think that nowadays there are about 600 registered radio stations in the country, then there was only Radio 1. So there were no commercial radio stations. There were no BBC local radio stations. There was only really Radio 1 and Radio 2. Radio 2 at the time was very middle-of-the-road station. So the only pop station was Radio 1. And at that time, pop music appealed to all generations. The families who would sit around the television watching Top of the Pops on a Thursday night, speculating about what was going to be number one that week. And you had people like, you know, David Cassidy, you had the Osmonds and the Jacksons, and that really their appeal was very broad, from grandparents through to grandchildren. So Radio 1 at that time was enormously powerful.
It was a massive, and you know, the DJs were as big a celebrities and as big a names during that time as the artists that they were playing, David.
Yes, that's right. When it came to opening big supermarkets, you know, people like Tesco's opening huge supermarkets around the country, the people who they booked to open them were either stars of Coronation Street or Radio 1 DJs. And whichever it was, there were huge crowds that would turn up. I can remember opening a supermarket in Oldham with Ken Dodd. Of course, Ken Dodd was also enormously popular. And there were so many people who turned up to see us. I mean, probably mainly to see him, really. But the streets were absolutely blocked, and no traffic could get through. I mean, it was almost like a sort of cup final crowd. It was incredible. So they were different times, really, and that's what I try and portray in the book.
What's your favourite memory looking back at your time with Radio 1, David? What would you look back with most fondness?
Well, the time that I was at Radio 1, it was all fun. I mean, the 70s were quite a tough time, really, because you had the miners' strikes, you had 3-day working week, you had rampant inflation. So they were quite tough times. And everybody needed a little bit of light entertainment to cheer them up. And that's what I think, you know, we did with the music. And it was the time of disco, so we were chasing around the country, appearing in discos as well. I think one of the fun things, really, was discovering new talent. And one of the acts that I discovered, if you like, were the Three Degrees. And I was doing the voiceover on Sunday night at the London Palladium when it came back. In those days, it used to be live in the 70s. And the Three Degrees made their debut on it, singing a song called Year of Decision. And it was around about the time that Diana Ross was leaving the Supremes. And I thought, these girls could be the new Supremes. I thought they were fantastic. So I said to my producer, could we have Year of Decision as my record of the week? Hamilton Hotshot, as we called it. And so the last minute on the Monday morning, we changed the record of the week and we had Year of Decision. The follow-up was When Will I See You Again, which, of course, went mega. I mean, it was a multi-million seller, number one in many countries around the world. And what was then nice, the sort of thing that would happen, was that the record company would say to me, well, look, you know, you've been behind us all the way. Would you present the girls with a gold disc? So I went on stage at the Victoria Apollo where they were appearing. I walked out and I said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to tell you that When Will I See You Again has sold a million. So the place erupted. I gave Sheila Ferguson, who was the lead singer, the gold disc, and I walked off and stood in the wings while they sang When Will I See You Again. So it was sort of goosebumps time because I felt part of their success. And I think that was one of the joys of being a Radio 1 DJ in those days.
And when you listen to radio now, well, what do you think of radio now? It's changed a lot, David, as you say. You know, radio presenters are different now, I suppose. They're definitely not celebrities anymore, unless you're the extremely high-paid ones that we've seen in the papers this week. What's your thoughts on radio as it is today?
Well, just on that thing that you mentioned there about money, I mean, we've all read this week about how much money people are earning now. Chris Evans is earning, you know, over $2 million, and Steve Wright, $500,000, and so on. When I was working at Radio 1 and Radio 2, we didn't earn very much money, and we used to have to do the gigs, really, to earn any money. And you, in a one night in a club, you could earn more than you had in a whole week then. I remember when I was doing Top of the Pops, I was never paid £100. I think the most I was paid was about £90. And we used to record it on a Wednesday night, and sometimes afterwards I would appear in a pub. It's quite funny, really. I'd appear in a pub in the Old Kent Road, and I'd get about three times as much money for working to about 200 people. And I used to think to myself, how can this be right? But, of course, Top of the Pops and Radio 1 gave you the shop window to do the gigs. But in those days, the BBC were very careful about their money. And the feeling was, you know, that it was licensed payers' money. And they had to be very, very careful about how they spent it. So in the days when I was there, I mean, this isn't sour grapes, just a fact. In the days when I was there, we didn't really earn that much money at all. And yet those were the days when Radio 1 had the biggest audience.
Yeah, yeah. It's such a change, isn't it?
It is indeed. You obviously had to top up your earnings then by being the ground announcer at Fulham, didn't you, David? I mean, that must have brought you some fond memories as well.
Well, I've been a Fulham supporter all my life. My mother lived in a flat near the ground, and the first football match I ever saw, I was about 8 or 9. I stood behind the goal, was at Fulham. And I had been there. I was a director there of the club in the 70s. And then sometime later, when Mohammed Al-Fayed came along, somebody said to me, I was doing radio in London, somebody said to me, would you like to do the... Oh, I know, it began with me just doing the half-time entertainment. So the first season I did that, went up the pitch at half-time and interviewed ex-players and, you know, played a couple of games with the fans or whatever. And then the next season they said, would you like to do the announcing as well? So the job sort of grew. And then they said, would you like to host one of the lounges with George Cohen, who played in the England World Cup team in 66? So the job sort of grew and grew. And I loved it because, you know, obviously I loved the club, I loved the game. And I had a little place in the dugout with the fourth official. So I could hear all the industrial language and I could feel the tackles as they went in. And it was really, I felt very much a part of it. During that era, they had a very successful time. They had three promotions. They had a European final against Atletico Madrid in Hamburg. And they had their longest ever run in the top league. So I was part of the most exciting time in Fulham's history. So it was 18 years I did it for. And when Mohammed Al-Fayed left, sadly, the club was relegated. And that was... I didn't finish doing it because they were relegated, but I sort of finished when he left, because to me, it was like the end of an era. So I'm sort of hoping that, rather like Leeds, you know, that we'll bounce back.
Yeah, do you still go down to the cottage? We always look forward to our trips. We cover Leeds United here. We always look forward to go to the cottage. It's the best press food in England.
Is it really?
Anywhere. It's magnificent.
Oh.
I do go to all the matches. Yeah, I've got a couple of season tickets and I go with my son. And it's quite nice now. I can actually watch the game, because when you're down pitch side, you don't... Funny thing, you know, about coaches as well, you don't really see the game that well. You're too close to it. But where I sit now up in the stand, I can see the game a lot better. And, of course, it is a wonderful ground. I mean, it's got so much character. You've got the cottage, which is a listed building. Looks a bit like... Anybody who hasn't been there, looks a bit like a cricket pavilion. And it's the only club where the players change in a house, because they change... the changing rooms are in Craven Cottage. You've got a couple of listed buildings there, and you've got the riverside setting. It's an old-fashioned stadium, of which there are very few left.
It is indeed. Ellen Road's old-fashioned, but hopefully they'll do that up very, very soon. I've got a couple of questions for you. I want to know who's the best player you've seen down at Craven Cottage, and I want to know who, of all the famous people you've worked with in the radio industry, who did you most admire, who was not a hero as such, but who did you look up to and think, yeah, I like what they do?
Well, first of all, to answer your football question, probably the best player I ever saw was Johnny Haynes, who was probably the finest player ever to play for Fulham. George Cohen says about him, he had great vision, by which I think he meant that he had eyes in the back of his head, because he could find somebody with a pass and not even turn round to see where they were. So he had this incredible, the word that George uses is vision. Where radio is concerned, my hero and my inspiration to come into radio was Pete Murray. And Pete Murray I used to listen to when I was a boy on Radio Luxembourg. He was very funny and very witty, and he was a brilliant broadcaster. And years later, I got to work with him, so my hero became my friend. And as a matter of fact, I should see him tomorrow, because I am hosting an event at BFI on the South Bank, which is organized by Kaleidoscope, who are the television archivists. And they found some tapes of old pop shows that they thought had been wiped. So they've got, well, there's actually a clip of Pete on Top of the Pops introducing Thunderclap Newman, which is a little surprise for him, because he's going to be there as my guest. They've got clips of Cliff Richard and people like that on Oh Boy and Lonnie Donegan, and lots of archive stuff that people thought was lost. And somebody has retrieved this and found it. And so a whole lot of people are coming along tomorrow. And Pete will be there as well. So he's 90 now. It's quite incredible. Still playing golf.
Yes,